All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first edition of the new revamp of the Way the Truth Warrior podcast. Very happy to be here with you. And we are on the mic with Mike today, the one and only Mike Barra. And he, of course, was featured on the premiere episode of the recent Ancient Aliens launch of their new season. I was also fortunate to be involved in that show as well. And Mike, it was kind of cool when I was watching the episode prior to me or after that I booked you for this show. I noticed they kind of played you and me back to back a couple times. I was pretty stoked about that because it's a huge honor to be able to be on there with guys like you. I've been watching you for years and I'm really happy that you're able to come and join us for the first show. So welcome, man.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. And I haven't actually seen the episode yet. I was out of town this weekend and at the New Living Expo in San Francisco. And I got back and last night I caught up on Billions and the Formula One race and some other things I missed. So probably tonight I'll watch Ancient Aliens. I don't like to watch myself, but I understand that except for the inexplicable presence of Skippy Podesta, that it was a great episode.
Right.
So,
yeah, that was a little bit weird.
I don't really think I should comment in any form too much about the content, but I just will say I don't agree with having him on the show. But what I'd like to get out to people is that I know there's been a lot of complaints on David Wilcock has taken a lot of heat, and Giorgio probably has been taking heat, and you know, because he's listed as an executive producer, but he doesn't actually work on every episode. But none of us had anything to do with that particular casting, and so I've been getting a lot of heat from it, and I just want to say I had nothing to do with it. And you know, I don't know what it's going to do to the brand, but I understand other than that there were people were very enthusiastic about it. And I also know they're going to be doing more 2-hour episodes because they seem to do,
well, that's cool.
Seem to do better with those in terms of ratings and advertising money and all that stuff. So,
well, it's clear that people want to know about this. This is a very popular subject still. It's always been. I mean, you can talk about this subject anywhere in the world. I mean, if I'm in vacation in like Mexico or something, I'm talking to the bartender. They're always talking about this stuff. So it's everywhere. And what I felt with this episode, I did watch it. I was impressed by the majority of the episode. They did bring on a lot of good content, some good speakers. Yeah, I was a little bit like, what's going on with Podesta? Jesus. But, you know, let's just move on from that. You had some really great clips in there. And so, you know, at least the content was strong.
You know, he's a controversial figure. And I was down at the expo. I was sitting next to him, another member of the UFO community who I'm not sure if he was in the episode or not. He might have been. But somebody who's well known, and I don't want to mention his name, and he was just going on and on about Podesta and the Clintons and how wonderful they were, and I'm like, so half the people in the audience were, oh yeah, all raptured, and then the other half were like, oh my god, that's disgusting. So he's a, you know, I don't know, weird choice if you ask me, weird casting choice, but it's their show, and I'm just lucky to be on it. So
yeah, no, I feel the same way, and I mean, at the end of the day, I can understand from the perspective of, hey, we just want to get the truth out there. And I do feel like a lot of researchers in the field are kind of like, well, hey, we'll go with, say, like Hillary Clinton as our candidate because she sort of has this weird interest in it and hooks up with guys like Rockefeller to talk about UFOs. And so therefore, if she were to have gotten into power, then maybe she would have disclosed to the entire world what the world already kind of knows. But, you know, I don't know what you feel about that, but...
No, I think actually, you know, look, and I mean, again, I think my political feelings are very clear if you follow my Twitter feed, which I've got to try to depoliticize a little bit. But I know, I think if she had won, we would have already been nuked in World War III. I'm very happy the election.
I second that. Yes. You
know, and although the guy in charge has done a few things I don't like, I think that there's a lot of, it's a lot of really 4D chess being played out there, you know? And, I mean, here we are. The Korean War is over, or about to be over, apparently, after 68 years. And I think when things like that are happening, you have to say things are better than they would have been. Because I can't see that happening under the establishment regime, which she would have represented if she'd been elected. So, you know, maybe we should drop the poll.
I know. I follow your Twitter and your Facebook, and I like pretty much all of your posts. And I was glad to have you one time. Maybe if you ever feel like doing a political show, come back on, and we'll do that for sure. But
yeah,
I wanted to talk to you
because that would be interesting because I think that there's, you know, people are not getting that what happens in politics is directly related to what we're doing, because this whole disclosure thing we always want to talk about, disclosure, is it's a political question, not a not a scientific question. It's just like the face on Mars or the ruins on the moon or anything NASA does. These are all political arguments. They're not scientific arguments. We won the scientific arguments a long time ago. Now it's just politics. Right. So it does have a relevance to our community and the truth that we're trying to get to. And I guess what I would say to people is that, you know, I just couldn't keep my mouth shut. I tried to, but I couldn't on this particular election. And it's not necessarily that I think the guy in the White House is some sort of genius, but I think he's the only real representation of change that I could see out there.
Right.
I can't see, you know, as I stated today, socialism is not people. Oh, I supported Bernie Sanders. Well, good for you. You do realize that socialism and communism have been responsible for more death, starvation, misery than any other philosophy.
Absolutely.
In the human race. Right.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't, you know, so, and I just couldn't go that way. And I just kind of looked at it and said, look, if we have any hope of really finding out the truth about what's going on with aliens and extraterrestrials, I think this is the guy that's going to do it. And so far, I have not been disappointed in his performance in that area. So I'll just leave it at that and remain hopeful, making a satanic sign there, remain hopeful for the future. Yeah,
any hand gesture that we do is a Masonic one, right? Isn't that how it goes?
Yeah.
Okay.
What is it? Tyrus? I don't know.
I think it's the six. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
I don't know what the fuck that is. I also have a Masonic tattoo on my shoulder, which people think means I'm a Freemason and I'm, you know, working from an agenda. Actually, I got it with a stripper in Vegas about 8 years ago. I'm not a Mason. Okay,
but here's the conspiracy theory, though, Mike.
I woke up, looked down, I realized I had a tattoo, and I was like, oh my God, what did I do?
Well, you know what? The conspiracy theorists are going to tell you that, you know, your Twitter handle is at Mike Barra 33. I mean, can you explain that to everybody that they don't? Yeah,
I can, because and a lot of my things are 33 or 333, there was another M Barra. And so I had to say, okay, they gave me a suggested number and I said, no, I'm just going to go with 33. Because it's not because necessarily it's Masonic, but I had just written Dark Mission and we talked about the significance of the number 33 and the number 333, which is sort of a hyperdimensional version. It has to do with the geometry of a circumscribed tetrahedron, which is what the essential mathematical message of the monuments of Mars is. So it's actually scientific reference, but I am not a Freemason. I would have to tell you the truth if I was. But I'm not, and I'm not saying I would object necessarily to joining at some point if I found a lodge that I thought was cool. I mean, it might be interesting to kind of go through some of the stuff and learn more about it. But you know, I have several friends that are Masons, Freemasons, and they're okay people. And it's kind of like the FBI. Mm. The vast majority of FBI agents are honest civil servants. The vast majority of Freemasons are decent men who want to better the world and better the communities they live in. But at the very top, it can be very corrupt. And I think that's what it's all about. So, you know, don't read anything into that. And what else would I put in there? 195, 19.5. I could have done that, but.
Well, pretty much any number you put in, your haters will come out and try to clock you with something.
But it's not significant.
No. And you know, I come from the perspective, I actually do another podcast with Michael Tesserian, you know, and he's very well adept at studying ancient secret societies and symbolism, geometry, all these kind of things. And one thing that we brought up was that these kind of symbols, these numbers, and even the Freemasonic symbol, there's nothing evil about the symbol. And I think a lot of people get caught up on that. It's just that when certain groups of people use it as a power sign or a gang sign, like the Bloods and the Crips, to mark territory or, you know, there's obviously a mathematical ratio that seems to keep coming up. You know, there's different.
How would you even do a Masonic gang sign? I mean, something like this.
Well, how do you do an M? I don't know. Like, how do you make the?
I don't know. Or a square and a compass, or you know, I don't know.
Right. But I mean, you know what I mean? Like, people read into it, and actually, that kind of dovetails nicely into this subject. A lot of people read into this subject, and I wanted to get a little bit about your journey coming into looking at some of these quote unquote wacky ideas of aliens. Right. I mean, God forbid we actually imagine that we're not alone in the universe and that we've possibly been visited. But I mean, what was it that got you into looking into it? Because I think that today, when I go to various conferences and UFO, whatever, and I hear the sort of the conversations going on, I find so much of it just to be nauseously completely ridiculous. But yet there's so many things that you can find, and people like yourself and many other researchers have brought up legit research points and scientific data, and even, you know, bringing forward some valid theories to at least consider. What's the difference for you between all the fluff and all the nonsense in the UFO world and the reality of it? And how was your journey like getting into it and then kind of differentiating what's bullshit and what's true?
Well, I approach it from, my background was aerospace engineering. And so I approach it from kind of a practical, fact-based orientation. And so there's a lot of interesting stuff out there. There's a lot of fascinating stories put out by a lot of people who are very successful at drawing big crowds. And we just got to remember that they're just stories. There's in many cases, there is zero, not a Masonic sign, not a gang sign. There's zero supporting evidence of their claims. And I'm just not that guy. I'm the guy, like, I want to put together a logical argument and say point one, point two, point three, supposition, point four, conclusion, this is what I think. And so I approach it more from a, I don't want to say scientific because that sounds kind of self-serving, but I guess it's a more practical scientific engineering perspective in terms of, I was more interested in the things that I felt like I could prove or not prove than I was in just, you know, wild speculation or repeating something that somebody told me.
Right.
So I think that those people have a place, you know, in the community, but they tend to come and be very big for a while and kind of burn themselves out because ultimately there's no supporting evidence. So, you know, I mean, my perspective is that, and this is why I got more politically oriented, active this last couple of years, is because I only give a shit about the truth. You know, there's a lot of people that are in this business, some of the corporations and stuff that just think this is entertainment, and it is entertainment, but you got to be entertaining. But the fact is that I'm in this because I'm interested in the truth and not my truth. I'm interested in the truth. You know, there is no my truth. There's the truth and my opinion. There's the truth and your opinion. Those are different things. Those are not, an opinion is not truth. It has to be backed by something.
Well, YouTube's going to shut us down now, just so you know, because I think you've offended every millennial that's watching. Sorry.
Well, just like fiat currency is not actually money. It's not backed by anything.
What?
Only if it's backed by gold or silver or assets or something else like that, then it's real money. So
right.
Otherwise, it's just paper. So at any rate, you know, that's kind of my that's where I've been coming from, and that's what I'm all about now. And that's why I'm in conflict with a lot of people in the community, because they think we should all stick together. But truthfully, if we go too far out on a limb and we start talking about alien mummies in Peru that we cannot prove and that we already know are not alien, if we push shit like that, the rest of us look like idiots. And it really
right.
pisses me off when somebody else makes me look like an idiot. It makes me want to say, fuck this whole thing. And I don't know, write novels or something. I don't know.
Hey, speaking of novels, didn't you write a novel? Isn't one of your, is Lightbringer?
Yeah,
well, talk about that quick for people.
I've actually written two, but one of them is in front of publishers right now. And this is Lightbringer. This is the first one I just put it. I had it. I almost sold it about three times to big publishers, and I finally decided I'm not just going to let it sit there. I'm going to put it out. I subsequently found out that books of this size, and this is about, gosh, I don't know, 300 pages, are actually not what you do on the on the internet or in the self-publishing business. What you want to do is you want to have like 25,000 word novellas and put them together into a bigger story, and that's how you're more successful. So I write fiction because I love it, and it's so much easier to write than nonfiction, because nonfiction requires so much more work. It requires all this, you know, background and detail, and you've got to make sure you have facts correct. And fiction, you just sit down and you just start going. And it just, it's basically, it's a thriller. It's a sci-fi thriller, kind of the X-Files meets the Da Vinci Code. And it's the story of an FBI agent and a secret government guy that she meets covering the murder of a JPL scientist. And it's all about what NASA is covering up and what they're going to do about it. The tagline is, the world was supposed to end on the world was supposed to end on December 21st, 2012. It did not. And that made some people very, very angry. So
that's
the elevator pitch.
So are you saying that it's fiction, but with a thread of truth?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, like, the whole point is to use fiction to communicate some ideas to people, right?
Right. And basically, it's basically the same ideas I would communicate in a lecture or something or a nonfiction book, but done in an entertaining way. And hopefully that will get me noticed as a fiction writer and I can move on to other things along those lines, because I really do enjoy it. Others have tried it, and just something, you know, who wouldn't want to have Whitley Strieber's career, you know, except for the bankruptcy part, but you know,
that happens.
Doing the nonfiction to fiction together, having the occasional project made into a film, movie, that would be awesome. So I don't know. It's kind of just what I like to do. And you know, like if I won the lottery tomorrow and didn't have to work, I think I would just write novels and screenplays and do that kind of thing.
Well, good for you, man. Following your passion. Yeah, you know what? And that's the key.
We'll put all this stuff into a fictional story that's entertaining. So you will like it. It is entertaining. You should pick it up. In fact, I'm going to reduce the price to 99 cents on Kindle here in a minute after we get done. So.
Oh, wow. Great. Yeah, definitely.
My things to do today on my to-do list for the day.
Send me the link after and we'll toss it up there for people.
Okay.
I wanted to just cover quickly for people that maybe missed the premiere episode or did watch it. The main concept they brought up in this was, of course, the $22 million Pentagon project. You've covered far more extensively the history of all of these different government projects that have gone, you know, basically taken taxpayer money and investigated this phenomena. So let's get into the phenomena, Mike. So we've got, obviously, we've had eyewitness testimony from all over the world for decades. We've had interest in this by the Air Force, by the Pentagon, by various government agencies around the world. We've all spent money checking it out. We've got Project Sign, Project Grudge, Project Blue Book, etc. And now we got this $22 million. You got big aerospace guys like Robert Bigelow involved in it, who's openly saying stuff like, yeah, I think it's true. I think we're not alone. I think we're being visited. What was your take? I mean, I know when they bring you in for the interview, you probably have all these notes if you're like me and you got all this stuff you want to say, and then they end up putting like a 5-second clip in. What would you say about this that you never really got to say on the show? And I guess you haven't seen it yet, but most of it probably never made it to air. What would you say about this program and what's your thoughts on it?
Well, I think it's a great way for Harry Reid to launder money to his campaign. Okay. Mm. That he then probably took and put in his pocket. So what he does is he gets funding for this study, which I believe sincerely he was interested in, and his friend Robert Bigelow was interested in, and then he gets $20 million allocated, which most of which goes to Bigelow Aerospace, and then Bigelow kicks in a couple hundred thousand into his campaign, which when he retires, Harry Reid takes with him and puts in his pocket, which is all completely legal, which is why the system is so corrupt and messed up. So that's my initial take on it. Then in watching the videos, I gotta tell you, there's nothing in any of those videos that is not conventional technology. There's nothing in there. Those are not alien spacecraft. There's three of them been released now, officially sanctioned by the government. Right. They're all drones or, you know, countermeasure devices, those kinds of things. And I have a bunch of different reasons why I believe that. And I will talk about it actually at Contact in the Desert coming up here at the end of the month, the first week in June. And so they're not alien spacecraft, and they're not even anything unusual. They're just secret projects that were probably being tested, and the regular Army, Navy, Air Force guys spotted them and like, hey, what the hell is this? So what's important to me is not the content of the videos, because the content of the videos is conventional. One of the ways you can tell, we should always look for, is if something's moving in a straight line, it's a ballistic trajectory, it's a conventional aircraft, okay? It is. You know, flying saucers, and by the way, we all know we have flying saucer technology, but flying saucers are going to do all sorts of incredible zigzagging things that you can't, you know, right angle turns at 4,000 miles an hour that regular aircraft can't do. That's when you got something. But this video is nothing exceptional. They just always move in a straight line. Big deal. The one drone thing, you know, they're saying it's this weird oblong object. If you look at it, what you're doing is you're actually looking down on top of a what I think is a UCAS drone, or a JUCAS drone, which is actually a project I worked on, unmanned drone with a flying wing. And you're just looking at it banking kind of back and forth from a higher perspective. And so there's, again, there's nothing really bizarre about it. But what's important is not that those are or are not UFOs or alien spacecraft. What's important is that the government is saying that they might be. And they're putting it out there as if they might be. And the news media, the corporate-owned news media, is covering it as if it might be. They're like, well, this is kind of interesting. Well, it's really not interesting if you know what you're looking at. But all these dumb news anchors, they actually covered it straight. So that's what's important. What's important is the political reaction to it, the news media reaction to it, and the fact that the government would put stuff out there. So I'm not a big... big fan of this particular project or anything, or what they've put out so far, but it's, I think you got to pay attention to the reaction to it and what's been admitted about it. That's the disclosure aspect of it, to my mind. You know, what's the name of the guy, the Hispanic guy that used to work on the project supposedly and now works. Forget his name.
I had it memorized 2 weeks ago and I forgot.
Yeah, I was.
What's
say
his name? Ruiz. Ruiz? Something. United.
Ruiz. Yeah, maybe
Ruiz.
I'm not very impressed with him. He doesn't. I listen to him talk. I don't think he's an engineer. It's interesting because, like, by contrast, Bob Lazar.
Right.
You know, people say, "Oh, Bob Lazar might have worked at Area 51, but he was the cook." No, Bob Lazar is either an engineer or a scientist, physicist. I can just tell you by the way he talks, the words he uses, and the way he puts things together. This guy, I don't know who he is. I don't know. I don't know what his qualifications were. I guess I have to dig into it a little bit more. But not to throw cold water on everybody's hopes, but I mean, I think, again, this is important, but it's important for the fact that it was put out at all and how the media reacted to it, not for the content, because the content is nothing significant.
Well, and you know what? You're making such a...
You can interrupt me anytime.
Oh, yeah, no. I'll interrupt you now.
Start filibustering, just interrupt.
It's all good. That's why we brought you here, man. But basically, I was thinking, as you're talking, it makes so much sense. I'm cautious of it as well, because I've been following this subject, you know, my entire life, always had an interest in it. I knew there was something to it. And there's been far better pieces of information, eyewitness testimony, documented events, all this kind of stuff that could have been covered by the media. Right. There are better videos. There's better information out there that would give people the indication that, yeah, we're probably being visited by other advanced civilizations. But the thing is why does the media deny it for years? And why do all the officials say they deny it? They make fun of it. They debunk it. They have, you know, all kinds of guys going out and writing blogs and attacking people that are talking about this information. Why for years would they have that campaign? And then all of a sudden, they're like, oh, you know what? There might actually be something to it. And they start leaking it in the mainstream. Some people would say, oh, it's because we have people like Donald Trump in there that are kicking stuff around and making things happen. But the other part of it might be that they don't want the actual truth about it. So I believe that it's happening, but they don't want the actual truth about it to be released. They want this sort of soft disinformation campaign version released of it so that they can control the outcome of what's going on. I mean, that's clearly why it's been hidden for 70 years, right?
I agree with you. And the thing is, it's not disinformation really, because they don't say anything about the video's content. Hmm. They really just acknowledge that it's, wow, isn't it really interesting that this video is out there? And wow, you know, we didn't know this. And so they're kind of flipping a switch. It's the switch has been flipped. And a lot of it does have to do with Trump coming into power and disclosure. That's, again, another reason I support him, because I think if we're going to get any kind of disclosure, it's going to be through this guy. It's not going to be through the establishment deep state candidates. So that's part of, I think, what's going on here, that this is happening now. But I think the bigger issue is that you're right. There is this, and it goes all the way back to the Brookings report that I wrote about in Dark Mission and in Ancient Aliens on the Moon, where, you know, you have this political, this very careful political aspect to this question, and the release of information must be incremental, because if it's not, people will go crazy. That's essentially what the report concluded that NASA commissioned at the beginning of the space program in 58, before we'd even put a rocket up. So, or maybe we put one rocket up or two. So, you know, it's just that the switch has been flipped. It's time to start putting some of this stuff out there. But I do have this caution for the community in general and the people that follow it, which is the UFO question, the alien question is, you know, when we talk about disclosure, we think we're just going to get aliens, right? They're just going to tell us about aliens. Like, that's the biggest secret, the biggest, darkest thing that's out there.
Right.
And that's not true. There's Agreed. A lot bigger, darker, uglier, horrific things that are out there that are connected to this, that are part of disclosure. So it's literally a be careful what you wish for question and issue. Because you're not just going to get aliens. You're going to get all the other stuff that goes with it. And I think we can see from Twitter and from people that are on the cutting edge of putting information out, people like, I would, you know, Jordan Sather is a friend of mine and a guy that I like. There's a lot of bigger, darker, uglier secrets out there. And so if we were to find out everything at once, it would be shattering to us, to many people, because there's a lot of people that don't want to know about this stuff. They don't want to admit this. And, you know, you're going to.
And even for the people that are wanting the disclosure, if they're looking for the whole happy ponies and rainbows version of this, where it's like, they're just hiding the Pleiadian angelic beings that want to come and save the earth from us. When those people are also going to be twigging out.
They are going to be in for a big fucking surprise if those people, the hippies, are going to take it on the chin. And not everybody's going to be able to handle it. A lot of people are going to just kind of go off the wall and go crazy over this, because it is going to be shocking and shattering when they find out, because the good guys are not who they think they are. The bad guys are not who they think they are. And disclosure is not what they think it is. So
Agreed.
it's going to be... It's going to be a big deal, and it's going to change. And, you know, I mean, I'm sitting here pretty smug thinking that I have it all figured out. I know who the good guys are, the bad guys are. I know what they're doing. Even I'm probably going to be shocked by some people that I thought were on one side or actually on the other side. And that's going to really be hard for a lot of people to comprehend and deal with. And that's why it's important to have folks like us, you and me, in the community to be prepared to talk to people about it afterwards. To help them through it and show them, well, this is kind of where you went wrong. When you bought into this, you know, that's kind of where you went wrong, but it's not your fault. You were brainwashed. You were brainwashed by the media and by what you were taught in school and things like that. So there's a lot of people out there who fancy themselves as enlightened and at the front of the, you know, the new wave that's coming, but they're really just on underneath that wave, and they're about to get crushed by it when it hits them. So, I would just say that you know, it's going to be, it's so, in fact, I've actually heard from people that are supposedly connected that what's out there is so big that they're not going to tell us all at once. And that's why we're getting this incremental thing, because it's little by little by little. There will be some big shocks, but those big shocks are only going to be maybe 30%, 33% of the 33. There we go again. 33% of the story, a third of the story. The other two thirds, they're going to give us some more in 25 years, and then they're going to give us the rest of it in 50 years, because it's that big a deal. So
do you think there's, I'm glad you're saying this, because, you know, I've had many people on the show in the past. I've listened to so many interviews from different people, and I believe everybody has something valuable to contribute, but there's very few people that will hit the nail on the head like that and say, look, we need to have a reality check here that this is not what we think it is. I think there's so many people that I think naturally as human beings, we want to be certain. We like certainty. We like to feel like we know what's going on. And we also like to have this inside scoop feeling where we feel like I've got the inside info and nobody else has it. And we got to be careful with that, with this, because like you said, this isn't about my truth and your truth and your none of that. This is about what is the truth. And we need to know that. I think it's valuable. But also, the truth is scary as shit. The truth is kind of in your face. It's not comfortable. It's often uncomfortable. So, but I do think it's valuable. So maybe my next question would be, what is your general theory then of the extraterrestrial presence? Like, I know this would be a huge question to open up, but like, think about it. Like you talked about dark moon and face on Mars and, you know, visitation in the past and visitation today. What's your overall theory on how this intelligence might be interacting with Earth and just how big it fucking is?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I did this reality show a few years ago for Discovery called Uncovering Aliens. And I had two co-stars. I had Daryl Sims and Stephen Jones. Yeah. Stephen Jones was a Brit. And he was like, oh, you know, the aliens are here to help us with the next step in our evolution. And, you know, I'm sitting there going, Stephen, we didn't ask for any help, by the way. You know, really interesting. We didn't ask. So never accept any help you don't ask for. That's my first admonition to the audience. And then there was Daryl, who'd had, you know, Stephen had what he called positive experiences. And then Daryl had very negative experiences. And he was like, no, they're evil. They're here to kill us. They're going to take our souls and our DNA. They're a bunch of bastards and we got to kill them all. He was a Texan. He's a Texan. He's not dead. I shouldn't talk about him like that. And in trying to balance those two, I realized that they were both right, that there are, just like there's good people and bad people, there are good aliens and there are bad aliens. And you know, we have to accept the reality that that's the case. And we have to do, you know, on the one hand, the good ones, let's see what they can contribute to our progress, I guess, under, you know, if we need help with something. But the bad ones, we need to defend ourselves against them. And we need to find ways to block them and reject them and get them the fuck off of our planet. So, you know, that's how I feel about it. I think that both dichotomies are true. The truth is probably that there are both of these types of entities operating here on the planet Earth. So, you know, again, I am also very optimistic in the sense that I don't think we need very much help. I mean, most of the so-called crises that we're supposed to be going through are fictional. They're just not real. They're, you know, global warming. How about this winter, folks? There's no right. Global warming. You look at the temperature measurements. And again,
it's climate change.
You look at the temperatures since we've been taking temperature measurements. It's only been since about 1880. And it's a straight line. You know, it gets warmer and it gets colder and it gets warmer and it gets colder. And right now we're actually in a colder cycle. And NASA and NOAA and the government and the left wingers are still trying to tell us the planet's getting warmer, and it's not. Neither is the rest of the solar system, because the sun is very quiet right now. So those kinds of issues, I don't happen to think we have a lot of problems. You know, I think we're doing just fine. We're starting.
And
to
any
work
problems
out
we do have, we
problems.
Can work it out. I mean, most of the problems we have are self-created. So therefore, it is up to us to fix them instead of going, hey, we need Jesus to come back. We need Muhammad to come back. We need the Andromedans
to
come
Jesus
help us.
Come back, or the Palladians to come and save us, or whatever. And it's like, you know, I think we can handle things okay. So like we should just, you know, I'd like them to just leave us alone and let us do our own thing. So
I agree.
I don't know. Did I answer the question?
No, you know, it was good. I mean, otherwise we'd have to do like 6 hours on this, but I just wanted to get an idea. Now you're a scientifically minded person. You think technically, I really appreciate that with this subject. Those are hard to find. What would you say in regards to the evidence? What was it that really persuaded you or continues to persuade you that you and I are not crazy for entertaining this idea that we're not alone in the universe and that they've probably visited us for thousands of years? They may even be a part of our history in a way that will, like you said, shock the world. You know, what was that compelling thing that really gave you that idea?
The way I always put it is the best evidence that we have that aliens exist is the fact that we exist. It's impossible with all of the Earth-like worlds that must be out there in this galaxy alone, not to mention all the hundreds of billions of other galaxies that exist. It's a literal impossibility, mathematical, guilt-edged impossibility that we are the only species in the history of the universe that has achieved this level of consciousness and technological mastery, as a minimum. So to me, once I figured that out, I'm like, okay, people can call me whatever they want for thinking that there are aliens, but they're absolute utter fools for thinking there aren't, because You want proof that aliens exist? Look in the mirror. You exist. So to me, it's a very short, simple answer. That's it.
That's perfect. I had a good idea about it. I was thinking the other day, because I had a conversation with someone very, very skeptical. And just so you know, I really, really appreciate and value skeptical people. I love it. I love when people come at you with like, oh, what about this? What about that? I know it seems kind of antagonistic, but I appreciate it. And even people watching right now, if you have any problem with anything we're saying, chat it up. I don't care. I want to know the truth. And I hope you do too. But my idea was, okay, if we look at it from a conceptual basis, because I can't bring an alien body from Peru to show you. So let's just think of it conceptually. I live in a place called British Columbia, Canada. What was that?
Mm-hmm. I said there aren't any there anyway.
So. Oh, okay. Yeah, good. But I'm in a place called British Columbia, Canada. Here, we have the most dense population of mountain lions and cougars where we live. And it's a small land. I mean, even History Channel does that show Alone, and they always cover this. But I was just thinking about it. I'm like, well, the average person living in British Columbia in their entire lifetime will never see, hear, or smell a cougar for their entire life. But they will most certainly have been seen multiple times, maybe regularly, by cougars. If you come and visit this island and you're here for a couple days, you'll probably have been seen by a cougar, but you will never see a cougar. And it's the same idea. You go around the island, you start talking to people like, oh, I know a guy who saw a cougar, or I saw one jump out of the bush once, or my dog barked at something and something rustled and I don't know what it was. You hear these little stories. And it almost reminds me of what people tell you about their UFO encounters, right? And I'm like, well, think about that. A creature living on the planet where we live right now, that the only evidence you have is that you read it on Wikipedia, you've been raised, you've seen images of it, National Geographic when you were a kid or whatever, you saw these images of mountain lions. We accept them as a reality. They're documented, of course. But you and your own personal experience do not experience these creatures, but they exist and they're watching you and you're not watching them. So if we can accept that we have a blind spot as human beings and that we like to feel like we're on the top of the food chain, intellectually, physically, whatever. But the fact of the matter is there are very intelligent creatures living on our own planet that are more intelligent in certain areas, like even the oceans. They have only, I mean, every day they're finding new creatures in the oceans they never saw before. And you're kind of like, well, that just shows that we can't be ignorant about this. And we can't have this arrogant, like, well, no, that's just absolutely ridiculous. You know, like there has to be something to it if we can't even see these cougars. So my question was, well, is there galactic mountain lions in a way? You know, is there another creature, an advanced civilization, like you said, that is watching maybe even a part of this earth? Maybe we're some science experiment, who knows? And we don't see them, but they see us and we get little glimmers here and there. And then those people in power that know a little bit more, they just kind of leak it out in a controlled fashion. I don't know.
Yeah, that's an excellent analogy. And I like it. And it's like you are the top of the food chain until you run into a mountain lion or a cougar and you don't have a gun on you. Right. Maybe you're not the top of the food chain in that moment. So, I think it's an excellent analogy. And also for the fact that you also have to protect yourself against a mountain lion. Or if you're going to go hiking in the hills and stuff around Vancouver, I guess you better, you know, I think you better take a gun.
Yeah, the mountain lion doesn't care about your feelings.
Do they allow you to have guns?
You can. Well, you can't carry handguns.
We can't carry.
We're not like Texas.
Not like.
No, highly regulated. But I would say that those mountain lions, they don't give a shit about your feelings. They don't care about the evolution of your species.
Nor do they give a shit about your laws.
They're just like, I'm hungry. I see a moving object that looks like, you know, an ape or something. I don't know. We don't have apes here.
No,
just us.
Okay. But Sasquatches.
No, well, maybe. I don't know.
Bigfoot. Right?
There's a Bigfoot probably. Yeah. Let's not go down that road. Well, okay. Mike, we've got about 10 minutes left here. I want to use this time as best we possibly can. Let's talk a little bit about like the moon and Mars. Okay. Again, those are episodes in themselves, but you did that book with Richard Hoagland back in the day. Maybe you can comment a bit on how that went. And then, you know, did we go to the moon? Did we go to the moon publicly? Was it all fake? Is the earth flat? I mean, or is it real? I don't know. Like, Where's your connection to those planets and how Earth's history might have been, you know, affected? Like, example, Mars. I don't know if you saw the Mars episode. I think you were in it with Ancient Aliens,
yeah,
where they had the idea of, well, we actually migrated from Mars to Earth because there was some kind of whatever chaos, nuclear explosion, war of the gods. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then now there's these looks like to be lost artifacts on both the moon and Mars. What's your whole sort of take on that?
Well, yeah, I was in that episode and I do support that. And it's really interesting because I have a brand new book that's going to come out in another week or two. It's going to be in the bookstores called Ancient Aliens and JFK. And that's actually what I was lecturing on in San Francisco this last weekend. And at the end of that book, I what I told people in the book and in my previous book, Hidden Agenda, what I told people was that, look, you know, Kennedy wanted to go to the moon because MJ-12 was blocking him out of access to the secret space program and the alien information that he knew that they had. So what he did was he said, okay, fuck you guys. I'm going to have my own public space program. We're going to go to the moon because we know that there's alien technology there, and we're going to retrieve it, and we're going to reverse engineer it and create our own public, private, secret space program. So it was like the civilian secret space program. That was the secret protocol of Apollo. And so then in order to support that, I had to look into, and I've done this before, but I had to repeat it again, did we really go to the moon or not? Because there's people that are going to be out there. Because my premise is the reason that Kennedy was killed is because he agreed, he had an agreement in place with Nikita Khrushchev to go to the moon jointly with the Soviet Union. It was going to be a joint American-Russian visit to the moon, and he was going to share everything with them. And when MJ-12 realized he was going to share the alien technology that they probably felt that we had that the Russians didn't, that's when they decided they had to blow his head off, which they proceeded to do 10 days after he made these arrangements. So if that's premise is a fact, then we have to honestly look at, did we fake the Apollo moon landings or not? So there's three chapters at the end dealing with all of the earlier claims about why we didn't go to the moon, the Van Allen radiation belt and all that nonsense. And then there's a chapter on this new theory by Jay Widener called, that he calls Kubrick's Odyssey, which is this idea that Stanley Kubrick himself filmed the fake moon landings. And so,
right, we've heard this, yeah.
I completely, utterly had to dismantle that because it's just plain and simple idiotic. Mm. And then the last chapter I actually talk about is Apollo 20, this video that came out where they supposedly did do a joint Russian mission. That turned out to just be a guy who was a sculptor and kind of a really interesting artist and created all this stuff. And you know, that was fake. So we had a fake series of videos that were actually faked that were supposed to make us think that we had gone to the moon and retrieved alien bodies and probably alien technology, which I think is probably exactly what we really did. And then we have to deal with the other claims of the people who are just, you know, I don't want to be too harsh here, but I do, scientifically ignorant people who believe that we never went to the moon. And I will just tell you flat out, we went. None of those arguments hold up. I will debate anybody, anytime, anywhere on any of the so-called evidence they think they have that we didn't actually go to the moon. We really did, and we had a reason for going.
If you want to debate, by the way, we'll use this show as a platform anytime. You let me know who challenges you, and we'll do a truth warrior blood sport event.
Jay Widener, I've agreed and offered to debate him anytime, and he just never wants to, which – you know, having looked at his evidence, I'm not shocked he doesn't want to publicly debate, because I would utterly humiliate him. So I think this is just nonsense that has to stop. Because again, just like you know, bad fake alien mummies make the rest of us look like idiots. Bad conspiracy theories give good conspiracy theories like mine a bad name. And so that's something that I actually feel fairly passionately about. So in terms of the other stuff, in Dark Mission and in Ancient Aliens on Mars, which is one of my previous books, I talk about the fact that Mars is actually not a planet at all. It's a moon of a planet that no longer exists. And it was in a tidal lock relationship, always showing the same face to that planet, just like the Earth and the moon. And, you know, I go into that, and that's what devastated the civilization that was there. I think John Brandenburg, with all due respect, and I do like John a lot, his theory is wrong, because what he thinks is that there was a, quote, nuclear war. But if you actually look at Mars, you can see all the craters on the southern hemisphere, like so many craters you can't even count them. And this is clearly the blast from a debris field, and you've got the tidal bulges. There's a lot of technical arguments we can get into. Hmm. What actually happened is that the other planet was either destroyed or blew up naturally. Now, there are ways that you can actually have a natural nuclear reaction inside a planet. There's papers that exist, and that the planet can then go into a chain reaction and explode. So that's what the radioactive residue he's detecting on Mars is coming from. Either that, or there was an exchange of nuclear weaponry in a war. So the planet, the parent planet, commonly called Planet V, I think I call it Maldek in my books, was either blown up or exploded due to a natural catastrophe. And these things are very plausible and very scientific. So I think it does, however, make a lot of sense that we actually came from, or part of our DNA is Martian, because if we end up in orbit, you know, our circadian rhythms, our body clocks shift from the 24-hour Earth orbit, or, you know, spin period, to 24.9 hours, which is the orbital spin period of Mars, not Earth. So that kind of implies that without the influence of the Earth's gravity and magnetic fields and all the other fields that we're in, that we actually revert to our root source DNA, which apparently has some connection to the planet Mars.
Well, that's interesting. So that question is kind of like, well, maybe we were the ancient aliens, or part of us or something like that. And there's always been that theory, you know, you get into guys like Lloyd Pye and others where they were diving in, trying to look at, you know, human chromosomes and the genetics saying, hey, we've been screwed around with. We look like, when you look at like the DNA of cloned sheep that have been cloned over and over again, human beings, we have all those mistakes. We have very similar, it looks like there's been some tampering going on. And there's always been this idea coming out of, you know, even from the ideas of like, you know, von Daniken and others, that there's been genetic manipulation that may have taken place. So you have sort of like the native genes of the planet mixed with this alien off-world gene that is what kind of makes us schizophrenic in nature, and why we don't really fit in so well around here.
Yeah, I mean, I accept those theories, but remember, those are just our bodies. Those are our hearts, our souls, our minds. That's not that, you know, nobody owns that. Nobody controls that.
Of course,
but
of course.
You know, we are, I think, in a genetic adaptation to this particular planet. And, you know, you look at stuff like the fact that we have to wear sunglasses outdoors, we get sunburned if we spend too much time in the sun's heat, that indicates we're not from this planet, right? If you believe in evolution and adaptation, why do we have to wear sunglasses and why do we get sunburned in the bright
sun? And there's many other reasons too. What was that book that just came out, that scientist, he wrote about, what is it, 20 reasons why human beings are not from Earth, or why, something like that. I can't remember the name of the book, but he brought up a whole bunch of points like that. I mean, other guys have brought up the point, like, you know, we've got hair on the front, not on the back, traditionally, I guess, unless you're from a Greek background or something.
Yeah, if you're Greek or Italian, you got hair on your back, right?
Then you're from the original stock. But like, there's just, it's interesting when you get into this, because this does bring up, in a weird way, some of the questions of like race and gender and sexual orientation, and how some of those things have happened, and weird abnormalities that have been tracked throughout history. And it just sort of brings up this question that's happening in the whole politically correct online world right now, university campuses. This might shine a whole new light on that entire discussion, if there's any validity to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't have much more to say on those subjects, but yeah. I also, other than you mentioned Lloyd Pye and his book, Everything You Know Is Wrong, Book One, Human Origins, it's a must read for anybody who's just getting into this field.
Oh, I agree.
Absolutely a must read.
May he rest in peace. We were sad to lose him. He was an icon in this field. Well,
yeah, he was another guy who worked from facts and data. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, Mike, our hour has gone by rather quickly. I wondered if you might hold around for a couple minutes with us after, so we can do a little exclusive banter on a couple things. If you got to go, please, you know, let me know. No problem. But I just want to thank you for coming on. Do you have any parting words for people? Any upcoming projects? Or you said you're speaking at Contact in the Desert. Any updates you want to let people know about?
Yeah, actually, I will be in Sedona, Arizona on May 18th at 7 o'clock for the Sedona MUFON meeting. That's going to be at the Sedona Public Library. So I'm looking forward to that visit to Arizona. That's a few weeks away. And then a couple weeks after that, it's Contact in the Desert 2018. Oh, it says 2017 on my website. At the Renaissance Hotel in Indian Wells, California. It's Palm Springs this year, so it's going to be hot outside, but we're going to be inside with air conditioning, a restaurant, and a bar for a change.
Oh, nice.
For Contact in the Desert. So I'm very excited about that. I think it's going to be a really fun event. And then I've got Alien Con a couple weeks after that, June 15th, 16th, and 17th in Pasadena. And that's all the Ancient Aliens crew getting together for the big Alien Con, Comic-Con kind of thing.
Oh,
and
cool.
This is my first year there. I'm really looking forward to that. And then on June 23rd, I'm in Manchester, England, which is cool because I'm also a Manchester City soccer fan. I have been since like a long time ago.
Nice.
And so I'm going to go to Manchester and speak there at Awakening UFO 2018, which is going to be in Manchester. And I'm going to wear my Manchester City blue, which will immediately piss off at least half the audience who are Manchester United fans. But oh well, you got to show your colors, right? You just have to.
Don't get lit on fire. Don't come after you.
My new book, Ancient Aliens and JFK, will be out in the next week or two. David Hatcher Childress, my publisher, is putting it together right now. And he really likes this book. And if I can please David, that means I think I've written a pretty good one. So that's
actually, I've been trying to get David. I've been trying to get him. I met him a couple years back in Toronto. Really cool guy. Yeah. I want to get him on the show. He's been busy.
Good luck with that.
He's like, I don't do shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if we can get him on, we'll promote the book from his side of it too. But yeah. Well, guys,
and then
you got to
forget Lightbringer, my first novel.
Yes.
You will really enjoy it. If you're into the X-Files at all, you really enjoy it. So
nice. Well, yeah. Next time I'll have you back. We can even talk about some of the stuff in Hollywood and the media. That's a pretty interesting subject. X-Files.
Oh, you said a boat. You're so Canadian. You said a boat.
I said a boot. A boot.
A boot. A boot.
Yep.
No,
man, you're catching
Canadians
me on.
Not say a boot. They say a boat. Like, I have a boat in the harbor.
Right.
That's how you say it. So it's like,
unless you're from Nova Scotia.
So I can talk about it.
If you're from Nova Scotia, you'll say a boot. Is it Nova Scotia?
A boot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Newfoundland.
Right. Or a Newfie. Yeah. If you're a Newfie.
Shout out to
all
my fellow.
By the way, how is Rita McNeil? Is she still alive? Rita McNeil.
I don't even know. Did she pass away? I missed out on that one.
She was 400 pounds or
something.
Something.
That was
a
Celine Dion's still kicking. Celine Dion's still kicking. Got any other good Canadians?
Okay.
Anne Murray. Yeah.
Anne Murray?
Anne Murray. She's still around. Katie Lang.
Loverboy?
Are they? I don't know. I don't follow it. Yeah. We're out of our league here, Mike. We're sorry, man. Well, hey, dude, this has been really fun.
Hey, you gave us Shatner, so.
You're welcome.
And then Leslie Nielsen, so Canadians.
And GSP. Right. We gave you GSP. Come on.
GSP.
Greatest fighter of all time. He's going to go in the Hall of Fame. Anyways, Mike, it's been a pleasure, man. You got to come back again. Definitely going to keep following your Twitter feed. Follow Mike at Mike Barra Illuminati Shill. No, sorry, at Mike Barra 33. and check out his website. And, you know, definitely follow his book, pick up his new book and check out the new premiere episode. Let us know what you think. Did you think, you know, putting Podesta in there was a good idea or not? But what do you think about the main, you know, content? Let us know in the comments. Big shout out to those that tuned in live for this episode. Thank you. Some great conversation going back and forth in there. And hold over, guys. Ryan and I just have a quick announcement. This is the first show that we're doing. We are now on Patreon. We want to try to make this thing the best, biggest, badass podcast that we possibly can. And we want to be our own sponsors. So instead of blasting you with ads and all this kind of stuff, we would like to sponsor our own show. So we've created a Patreon page. We've got some wicked, wicked reward tiers there for you. So we just have a little video we're going to close this down with. Oh, we're not closing it down? We'll stand with Mike after. We'll put it in post-production. Okay, that's fine. No worries. Either way, you're going to watch the video and hopefully come support us. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. Mike, stay a couple minutes with us, and everybody will catch you next time on The Way of the Truth Warrior. Thanks for tuning in.